This morning we're going to begin a series of messages called Detours, Dead Ends, and Dry Holes. So today I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 37, verse 28. If you were in Warren Jones' class this morning and you began your nap from sleep deprivation of changing the clock, by the end of my sermon, between the two of us, you will be caught up on sleep deprivation for the whole week and leave here normal. Genesis chapter 37, verse 28. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When I took care of my parents for about 5 years over in Augusta, every other Thursday I had to travel to that town. There's no way to get there except down I-20. Federal government had some extra money at that time, and when you hit Conyers, they had begun taking up entire sections of I-20. Remember, it was poured concrete sections. They were paving all the way down to Covington. We had to get off on a little two-lane road, and we were on that two-lane road all the way down to Madison, Georgia. Well, a good trip is 3.5 hours from here to Augusta if you don't run into any wrecks. But if you get detoured, it can take 4.5 or 5 hours. I was one frustrated caregiver. Let's bring it a little closer to home. This past week, if you went down 2nd Avenue, there was a detour because there's a movie being filmed, but nobody knows what it's about. Now, let me ask you a question. How many times in our lifetime can the railroad tracks and the crossing on Maple Road be resurfaced? You're driving north or south on Maple Road, maybe you're going to town for work, or you're going for a doctor's appointment, or you're heading south and you're headed toward the Pepperell School District, and all of a sudden there's a detour. A detour will finally take you where you want to go, but it is the most indirect path that you could ever select. So you're here today and everything's going well for you, and then the next thing you know, your car breaks down. You get back from vacation and your freezer went out and flooded the floor. You go to work and you find out there's some cuts taking place and you lost your job, or you just took a big pay cut to keep the present job. Your baby gets sick. Well, you're diagnosed with terminal cancer. Your dad wants to get a divorce from your mom. A mom and dad find out one or both or three of their kids are addicted to drugs. You lose a child to a disease. Your wife is tragically killed on her way to work. Your child is missing and nobody can find your child. Your wife walks out after another man. Your boyfriend or your girlfriend breaks up with you, and on and on and on it goes. Lots of these are detours, and when they come our way, sometimes we feel like that's a shipwreck. Well, today I want us to look at Joseph here in the Old Testament. You began learning about him probably when you were in elementary school, in Sunday school, and we know that he is a man who was favored by his father. He was also a dynamic dreamer. And in these dreams and visions that he was given by God, he saw himself as one day being a ruler, people serving him, including his brothers. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever thought you ever had everything figured out and you had a plan for your life you thought was God's plan, and you're just so excited about it's unfolding, and all of a sudden you hit a brick wall and everything is set on delay, and you're going down a detour? The word detour, as defined in the dictionary, is a way of going from one place to another that is not the shortest or usual way, or a route that is used temporarily because the main route is blocked. We find that Joseph finds a massive roadblock, a detour with his life before he arrives where God wants him to be. First of all, I want you to notice the devastation of a detour. In the early part of this chapter, you see that Joseph is just a a young man whose light is shining to all the people who know him. One of the problems he has is he's his daddy's favorite son, and his dad lets it be known. He even bought him a Ralph Lauren multicolored coat. He didn't buy one for any of the other brothers. He just got this one at the outlet for Joseph. Jacob favored the boy so much, his brothers envied him. And we know that envy breeds jealousy, then leads to hatred. In a matter of 17 years, the brothers of Joseph cannot even interact with him without spewing out their bitterness and their hatred. On top of all this, God has allowed this young man to have dreams. God has let him know you're going to be put in a lofty place of responsibility. Now, here's another problem. Joseph decides regularly that he will just share the dreams with his brothers and let his older brothers know that one day you're going to bow down and serve me. And reading this chapter is something I never really noticed that much. But when you read this chapter over and over again, you'll find one little detail that we pass over. It seemed that Joseph had a little tinge of pride in his life, and he was not adequately prepared to be elevated just yet. The Lord had big plans for him, but before allowing him to be lifted up, Joseph had to be knocked down. You know, God has a way of humbling those who elevate themselves. And Joseph is going to see his dreams fulfilled, but God's not going to let this happen yet until this arrogance is dealt with in his life. And notice what happens. He goes from privileged person into slavery. Genesis 37, 28. Then there passed by Midianites, merchant men, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and then they brought him to Egypt. Look at Genesis chapter 37, verse 36. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. And Genesis chapter 45, verse 4. And Joseph said unto his brothers, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. And when you look in Acts chapter 7, verse 9. And the patriarchs moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt, but God was with him. So let's pick up the story of Joseph, beginning here with his brothers, placing him in a pit with a plot to kill him. Judah says, we better not kill him. He said, because we're going to have to deal with several things. One, we're going to have to explain this to Dad. We're going to have to lie to Dad. We're going to have to dispose of his body. He said, just be better if we made some money off of him, sold him to the Ishmaelites as a slave. That way the body will never be discovered. We don't have to hide his body. We don't have to kill him. Let's just send him on to Egypt with the Ishmaelites. Now Judah proposes that they sell the boy rather than to kill him. Joseph had already been, they'd already taken his coat of many colors, his coat of distinction, and now he was handed over to a group of Ishmaelites. Now you can see these events unfolding as Joseph is taken out of the pit. Here he is looking around his brothers, and they're wondering, why in the world are you selling me as a slave? You can see him as he fights, as he tries to cling on to them, but they pass him off as a slave. Then you go to Genesis chapter 42, verse 21. They said to one another, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, and that we saw the anguish of his soul. But when he besought us, we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. Can you envision Joseph? All of a sudden, he's a favored son. He's sold as a slave, and he's put in restraints probably around his wrist and his ankles. He is in chains and in shackles. Notice the life of Joseph is just crumbling in his very sight. He's just shattered. He is hopeless. Now be careful about people who step in and offer quick advice to you when all of a sudden you run into a detour in your life. I was reading the other day about a pastor who had flown from his place of service to another state for a meeting. He came back. One of the deacons in his church picked him up. He was there to give him a ride. And so when luggage was placed in the deacon's car, and the pastor and deacon got in, and the pastor said, "Well, how are things going?" The deacon said, "Well, it's been pretty rough around here." He said, "We had a tornado." He said, "I want you to know the tornado blew my house away." And the pastor said, "No wonder it blew your house away, because of the way you've been living and as unfaithful as you are to God, your house should have blown away." And the man said, "Well, Pastor, your house blew away too." So think about that. It's tough to be a tither and then lose your job. It's hard when you don't smoke or you don't drink and they say the diagnosis is cancer. And the hardest things in life to handle are the things that you really don't understand. Hold on tight to your God-given dreams. Now notice he moves from pride to pain. He is with the Ishmaelites. Joseph is on that trek to Egypt. I can see him looking back, wondering why. Why in the world would my brothers do this to me? And then he's thinking, am I ever going to see my father who loves me so much? Will I ever see him again? He was to have been elevated. This was not merely a dream, but that was actually an edict from God. Why had God given him those dreams and now this detour? He's supposed to be on an upward path, but here he is going into slavery, sold like a piece of property. Well, I want you to think about this. When God wanted to perfect Abraham, you remember that he delayed the birth of Isaac for about 25 years. When God wanted to perfect Moses, he sent him out in the wilderness to lead sheep for about 40 years. When God wanted to perfect Hannah, he closed her womb for many years. When God wanted to perfect Paul, remember he sent Paul home for a while and made him wait for several years before he was used in ministry. Are things not going very well in your life at this time, at this very moment? Have you ever wondered, God may have allowed a delay, a detour in your life before he gets you where he wants you to go? Well, I think about Tim Tebow. The only thing I think negative about Tim Tebow is he played for the University of Florida. And he made Georgia cry and grieve from year to year. But other than that, Tim Tebow is one of the finest Christian athletes and young men in this nation. But think about Tim Tebow. He won the Heisman Trophy. So you think he's just got to be a first-round draft pick in the NFL. Well, all that didn't work out too well, did it? He played for a couple of teams in the NFL, and he was cut. And why was he cut? He was not one out there disrespecting our flag and getting down on his knee, taking a knee rather than saluting the flag. He's a person that is lifting his hands up to God. He's one that displays his Christianity, and that's why he's not playing in the NFL. I don't care what anybody tells you. They'd rather have a bunch of thugs and wife abusers and adulterers making the multi-millions of dollars than somebody that stands for the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But look what's happened to him. He's written several best-selling books. He started nonprofits. One of the chief of those would be The Night to Shine. Everybody thought he was going to marry some little girl from Podunk, South Carolina. So he went out and married the former Miss Universe. Sounds like things are working out pretty good for old Tim Tebow. But he's a man who's known what it's like to have one detour after another, like old Joseph. And then notice the depth of the detour for Joseph in Genesis 37:28. Then there passed by Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph into Egypt. But in Genesis 37:36, and the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. Now we've discussed the unwanted plummet of Joseph, and now we see the unlikely path of Joseph. You ever found yourself in the midst of a situation and you ask this question, how in the world did I end up right here? What am I doing here? So Joseph was on an upward path of distinction and elevation, high position, but now he's here. Why? He never saw any of his dreams in this. Nothing's being fulfilled as far as he's concerned, and there was nothing in his life that had forewarned him that he was going to be in bondage, anguish, and unfathomable despair. Now, notice what he learned. He learned that in life, yes, we make some choices, but the ultimate control of our life is not in our hands. Notice who commands our life. We're talking about the son of distinction here, the son of favorable devotion. We're talking about Joseph and the son that was spoiled by his father but hated by his brothers. Joseph is on the road to Egypt, and most likely those that purchased him for 20 pieces of silver knew that they would get a whole lot more for this man than others that they had sold. Well, what did Joseph learn from this horrible experience? Well, I know he learned this. He was not in charge of his life. You know, every day I ask God to order my steps. I haven't always done that. But I found out that if you'll trust him, he puts you in places where you need to be to help somebody else. You may be sharing Christ with them. Somebody may need a meal. They might need just a word of encouragement. But if you ask God to do that, he will lead your path. So when Joseph was in the presence of his father, he seemed to be empowered. But all that has changed. I read the other day a story by a pastor. He said he had a man in his church who was very, very successful. He said he taught a huge Sunday school class. He said when his youngest girl graduated from high school, youngest daughter, talking about this Sunday school teacher, said, out of nowhere, this Sunday school teacher's wife left him for another man. He was just devastated. Well, his business started going down. He just couldn't concentrate much. Then he got injured. He got hooked on pain pills, and he lost everything he had. He said, I lost track with him, and he said, one weekday, I was asked to come preach at a homeless shelter, and he said, I looked up, and there was that former successful man and Sunday school teacher in just literal rags. And he said, after I preached at the homeless shelter, I went up to see what happened to him. He told me about his addiction and losing his business. And he said, I live down here under a bridge in the city. Good news is, a recovery group took him in. He got the right kind of help, and now his life is on the upward path. But he says, I've never forgotten this story. That lets us know that we are not in control. Second thing I want you to write down here is when the choice is not ours. God can and will take us to places that we would not go within our own powers. Joseph would never have been placed within that pit. He by no means would have allowed himself to be sold in a caravan that was headed to Egypt, but he had no real choice. The moment you think you have life by the horns, you're going to wind up in an uncomfortable, unwanted, miserable situation. And this time, Joseph was given an opportunity to contemplate on what was going to elicit. Detours that God causes, that's one part. But then there are detours that are made by our own bad choices when it comes to morals and temptations by Satan. I don't believe I've ever told this before, and one of my secretaries told me I shouldn't tell it now, so I'm going to go ahead and do it. But I'll never forget when I flew out to seminary by myself. It's the second time I'd ever been on a plane, flew both times by myself. Bought me a ticket with Delta Airlines, flew from Augusta, Atlanta, out to Dallas-Fort Worth, and I rented a car, first time I'd ever rented a car. I didn't know that you need a credit card to rent an automobile. And I told the lady, I have cash. Here is the cash. I have insurance. I stayed there for 2 hours. And finally, they had to arrest me for loitering or rent me a car for cash. And I rented a Camaro. Now, Southwestern Seminary at that time in order to recruit students, would pay for your lodging and your meals, not your transportation, if you come out for a two-day visit to the school. So I drove from Dallas to Fort Worth. You know, I'm pretty hot now. I've got my first Camaro I've ever driven. And so I'm riding out there in a rental car. And so they showed me around the first day. Everything went well. And they said, now you're going to stay in a motel just south of I-35. Now, south of I-35, I didn't know at the time, not a very good district. Of course, they're paying for my lodging for 2 nights, so that's fine. So I get to my hotel room about 8 o'clock that night. And I got in trying to get comfortable, going to go to sleep here. And all of a sudden, there was a knock at my door. Well, they understand now. I'm in my early 20s. I'm a lot dumber then than I am now. And I opened the door, and there was a prostitute standing there. And she said, sir, would you like company for the evening? Now, ladies and gentlemen, I wasn't sitting there saying, I wonder if I need to lead this lady to Jesus. You understand? I said, no, ma'am, I'm just fine. Have a good evening. Shut the door. Next day, I went to the registrar's office. I said, I know there's a lot of things you can't help, but I said, the motel that you're putting your recruits in, there are prostitutes working the rooms every night. And then I started thinking this. Maybe the seminary put us there on purpose. And maybe they had the little ring doorbell thing set up already. But I want you to think about this. I had to make a choice that fast. And let me tell you what would have happened. Had I said yes, I was engaged to Delaine, I would have lost her. That gets out. I've lost the call that God's given me to go into ministry. And I'm the germophobic, and I'm aware of diseases. That'll help you a lot. You go home to the same wife every night. And then what does the Bible say about committing adultery and fornication? Ladies and gentlemen, that one night at 9 o'clock in that motel room could absolutely have crashed my entire life. Now notice the disclosure at the end of the detour. I dare say that most of us attribute setbacks to the devil, yet a lot of times the devil's not involved at all. We just make some foolish assessments and we make some bad decisions. I love GPS most of the time. Helps us, give us an estimated time of arrival, tells us what's in front of us, back of us. You can get an aerial view of things. That's a whole lot better than a paper map. But the problem with you and me, we can see only as far as we can in front of our face. But when we have the Holy Spirit living on us and we get in the Word, I want you to know that God gives us the same view that He has of things and circumstances that are here in this world. So as human beings, we don't have the luxury of seeing the view from where God sits. He sees the beginning, the middle, and the ending. We're merely stuck with the current, which makes the unknown scary and somewhat unnerving. In God's time, He reveals His work of His unseen hand. And notice the directions for your detours. Next time you're facing a personal dilemma, when you got life going this way, and you think this is where I'm supposed to go, and all of a sudden you got a detour not caused by some bad choice that you made, something that allowed God to come in your life. Here's the first thing you want to do, just very, very practical. Wait on the Lord. Just wait on Him. Just slow down and take some time to sort out the issues confronting you and reflect on His promises. I love Ecclesiastes 3:1. There's an appointed time for everything, and there is a time for every event under heaven. There's a time to wait. There's a time to advance. When the detour comes, be sure you take time to wait on the Lord. The second thing you want to write down is this. Very simple. Ask God for patience and wisdom. Galatians 5:22. And the fruit of the Spirit is simple. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things, there is no law. When we live under the control of the Holy Spirit, we give God an opportunity to grow us during a time of dilemma and detour. Third thing I want you to write down is this. Imagine the consequences of a wrong decision. Imagine the consequences of a wrong decision. You take some time to think how this decision could impact you and your family. What are the long-term ramifications when you're in the middle of a detour, and if you try to take shortcuts out of that, not God's way, what's that going to do to you and your family? The last thing I want you to write down is this. Think about the life values you'll be reflecting in your decision. Now, this is something that's in such short supply now. What about your character? What about your integrity? What about your honesty? Will you have to compromise any of these values to follow through with your decision? If so, you need to just stop and wait on God. I was talking to somebody last week that works with our convention, and I asked him about a pastor that I knew 23 years ago. And he was an excellent preacher, sharp guy, started a Bible college. He said, well, he had to leave that church. Said he went to another church, told me where he went. I said, well, how's that going? He said, well, he stole a lot of money. Instead of prosecuting him, they set up a payment plan and fired him. I said, well, you know, I've set up here where there's three rungs of security between me and any money. And I said, I don't even know the combination to the safe, and I don't ever want to know it. I said, if there's an embezzlement around here, I said, my fingerprints won't be on anything because I made a decision a long time ago to stay as far away from money as I could. And maybe you have some financial goals you're trying to meet. You got some bills you're trying to pay. Maybe you're going through a little financial detour. But the best thing to do is just trust God. Do everything you can as if it depends on you, and pray as if everything depends on God. And guess what? That'll preserve your integrity, your honesty, and your character. When faced with personal dilemmas, we need to remember that the role of biblical faith is to be employed. Whatever is done by faith is done for the glory of God. Faith teaches us the willingness to wait on the Lord, and faith reminds us to act on the authority of the Word in Romans 10:17. So faith comes from hearing, and hearing by the Word of Christ. Walking by faith, even in your detours, will later, as your steps are ordered by God, will lead to joy and lead to peace. Now, many of you have heard this story from 1956. Some young missionaries, five young missionaries, went to a primitive people called the Aka Indians. And what happened was, there was a pilot. He flew a little Piper plane there in Ecuador. And so he flew this plane into an area. His name was Nate Saint, where the Aka Indians lived. Now, if you got in their territory, in their jungle, they had one policy: kill you if you were an outsider. So Nate Saint had flown his plane on the banks of this river several times there in Ecuador over a several month period of time, and swapped gifts with them. Everything had gone well. So he went back to see some of his friends, missionary friends, Jim Elliott, Ed McCulley, Pete Fleming, and Roger Yoderin. Told them, I think it's going to be okay. We need to go and reach these people for Christ. They all prayed about it, said, we think this is what God wants us to do. And I want you to know, not long after they landed, the Aka Indians came out and speared every one of them. And then they took machetes and cut their bodies into pieces. Miles away, there was a little 5-year-old boy named Steve Saint. His daddy was the pilot of the plane. He was grieving the loss of his father. He had an aunt that lived not too far away, Rachel Saint, a Bible translator, sister to Nate, the pilot. Later on, along with Elizabeth Elliott, wife of Jim Elliott, they went to live among the Aka Indians. They won confidence and won respect of the Aka Indians. And after many years, the Gospel of Mark was translated into the Indian language. A number of the Akas became Christians, including a man named Minke, who actually delivered the final spear that ultimately killed Steve Saint's father. Guess what little Steve in later years was called to do? He's deprived of his father at the age of 5. He felt called of God to go live among the Aka Indians. And he continued to see many come to faith in Christ. And here's what he said later in his life. Steve, the pilot's son, what the Akas meant for evil, God used for good. Given the chance to rewrite the story, I would not be willing to change it. How do you respond to detours in your life? The one God's allows, not the ones that we throw ourselves into by bad choices. Joseph just continued to be faithful until he became the supreme man in his land. And then when he had the encounter with his brothers, you meant it to me for evil, but God meant it for good. What an attitude. What a faith. How deep is your faith in mine as we encounter these detours in life? Will you stand right where you are? Heads are bowed, eyes are closed. Heavenly